Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis off for another day of broadcast insolence. All right.
Much to get to today.
Oh, I'd say so. And on the CLTV and on the WGN radio. And first, I want to start with Eric Rung, who was in the courtroom for WGN radio and television today. And actually in the overflow room, but he was at the courthouse, I should say. And following all of this, let's just talk about where we stand right now. Obviously, the jury, we've been reporting, has got the case. What is the anticipation about the rest of the schedule for today? Do we know?
Well, here's what we do know is that the judge said that they were probably going to go until about 5 or 6 tonight. And unless they were getting close to getting a verdict, that would be the end of deliberations for today. And then we would find out once and for all whether or not this jury is going to be sequestered during these deliberations. And I talked to a number of people that have been down here at 26 in California, the Cook County Criminal Courthouse, for some time now. They said they would be shocked if this jury was not sequestered just because this case was such a high-profile case. But the jury's had it since about 12:40 this afternoon, and deliberations continue. They've come out a couple times to ask for clarifications and on the instructions that the judge gave them on each of the counts that Jason Van Dyke is facing. And they also gave them the instruction and allowed this, as we've been reporting all afternoon, that they can consider a second-degree murder charge, which is, of course, less severe than the first-degree murder charge that Van Dyke has also been charged with.
Less severe in terms of penalty. But if you listen to the case today, and I can't even begin to play you back the jury instructions because they are really complicated. And a couple times I was watching it and just throwing my hands up.
Right.
Like, wait, what did you... The judge seemed to be... at one point, he was talking about how you had to find them guilty of first-degree murder before he can consider the lesser charge of manslaughter, because then there would be mitigating circumstances to take you off the murder into the manslaughter charge, which
super technical stuff.
Yeah, and it's a legal technicality that most lay people don't understand. We had to have Mike Monaco here yesterday explaining it to us over and over and over again before we understood it. So as the judge was explaining it in the courtroom, and I think doing it as well as you can do, because he's working off of a protocol sheet, it does still require. I am not in any way surprised that this jury had to stop and go, whoa, you got to explain that again to us.
Yeah, and the second-degree murder versus manslaughter, it's commonly known as manslaughter, right? But he calls it second-degree murder in the case. Eric, the difference there, the mitigating factor, is that the way I understood it, the judge told the jury that they can consider whether Van Dyke believed deadly force was justified, but that belief was unreasonable. So even if he believed that there was fear for his life and life of others, that if they felt as if that fear was unreasonable, they would potentially be able to convict on the second degree murder.
And that's how I understand it as well. Now, I will say, in other high profile cases that have multiple counts like this, it would not be out of the ordinary for the jury to come back 3 or 4 times to get clarification on different rules of law here. Again, I mean, you're not talking to lawyers here.
Right.
And just us, as we were listening to it, we keep having to ask attorneys and other law experts exactly what this stuff means. And so I would not be surprised if we hear from them at least 2 or 3 more times on clarifications on what they can and cannot do. And when they'll bring them all out, the judge will explain it again, and then they'll send them back into the jury room.
Would they be sequestered? It would be all weekend as well, and would they deliberate this weekend and Columbus Day? Each day, the jury would also deliberate while they're sequestered on the weekend?
From my understanding, once they're sequestered, they're just going to go straight through, and they'll be back here Friday, they'll be back here Saturday, they'll be back here Sunday until they come up with a verdict. That's my understanding on how this works. Of course, you've got a lot of things going on in the city here, and you have a lot of people talking about some very large protests, depending on either way this verdict goes. We had a lot of clergy here this morning talking about how after the verdict, no matter what it is, that they're going to meet at City Hall and they're going to protest. And of course, you've got the marathon on Sunday. You got millions of people in downtown Chicago, which potentially could be a spot where they're going to be meeting to protest during all of this. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here, and it really, when they come down with this verdict, you know, it's just really going to be, it's going to be touch and go, because no one is exactly sure what's going to happen next with the protests. And depending on the day, that could have a big impact on the city.
Well, people will be unhappy no matter what, too, no matter what the verdict is.
Right. But, I mean, you might get celebration, you might get anger, you might get who knows what you're going to get. All I can tell you is we can report that there's a large contingent of mounted patrol units mm-hmm. that have been deployed on the Chicago River.
Saw it right away, right off Michigan Avenue here near our studios. You saw a huge police presence there, and they say that police officers will be working 12-hour shifts in order to provide an extra 4,000 officers on our streets in order to handle whatever reaction there is.
All right.
And I've been talking to... Oh, I'm sorry. I just one quick other note here. I've been talking to some of my friends, actually, that work downtown in a lot of different law offices. One in the Sears Tower said that they got a note which basically said, hey, get ready, because this verdict is going to come down and we need your security plan, because there's a good chance that we may shut this whole place down. So, I mean, this whole city in any of those large offices, they're taking this very seriously. Of course, the police department and the courthouse has been talking about their plans for security as well.
Got it. Eric, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
Eric.
It. Eric Rung.
You got it.
Reporting to us from 26 in California, where the jury now has the case in the murder trial of Jason Van Dyke. Let us check in with Ben Bradley and the WGN TV newsroom right after Judy tells us what is happening in the WGN radio newsroom.
Well, preparing for that Van Dyke verdict in Chicago.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right, we have Ben Bradley. He's at the WGN-TV, mm-hmm. and he's standing by right now to talk to us about city preparations for the aftermath of the verdict here in Jason Van Dyke. We certainly don't know if a verdict is imminent. You never know in a situation like this. We know the jury has it. They've requested a couple clarifications so far. Since getting the case at about 12:30, we're told they also stopped for lunch at some point, or may have had lunch brought to them. So right now we're about 3 hours into them having the case. I don't think it's anticipated that they're going to have a decision tonight, but the city says that we may get a 2-hour notification before the jury is
read. We're hearing
read.
We're going to get at least a 1-hour notification when the jury comes back with a verdict, to give everyone an opportunity to get back in place. I don't assume, for example, Jason Van Dyke and his legal team are hanging out at 26 in California. So everyone will need a chance to get back to the courthouse, to get back in place. We expect at least a 1-hour update of a verdict, and the judge giving us the guidance that short of being very close to a verdict, he thinks he'll have the jury go till about 6 or 6:30 each day, and then he will let them go. He has not yet announced whether he will sequester them. We assume he will.
Mm-hmm. And they would, and if they sequester him, then they would deliberate. It's your understanding all weekend long, Columbus Day,
go straight through the weekend. They would keep right at it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, talking about the preparations, the Chicago Police Department issued some guidance to business owners and to residents, you know, talking about securing things that could be used in a protest to cause damage, to break windows, things like construction materials. Talked about, you know, looking in planters, kind of the typical guidance that's given anytime there's the possibility of protest. And the Chicago Public Schools put out a rather extensive publication with guidance for everybody from, you know, school administrators to teachers, and how to respond to a verdict in the Jason Van Dyke trial. I won't go through all of it, but I did think it was interesting that the Chicago Public School System appears to be sanctioning student walkouts to protest. The guidance includes a statement that says disciplinary consequences should not be issued as long as the walkout follows guidelines and does not exceed 30 minutes. So CPS seems to be saying, hey, if kids at a particular school, you know, want to protest, want to walk out of school, they need to talk to administrators first And that type of demonstration, if it does not exceed 30 minutes, it doesn't sound like CPS is planning on disciplining anybody. They also have rather extensive guidelines on how teachers should talk to kids in schools, suggestions for working through emotions, suggestions for talking about trust in the community. And so, everybody from the school system to police and downtown businesses and neighborhoods are preparing for this. St. Ignatius in the South Loop there sent a note home to parents saying that if there is a verdict that's going to be read during the school day, they're going to dismiss students early because they have a lot of students spread out all over the city. And if there is any type of protest or disturbance, they don't want kids to be commuting home through that.
I'm looking at a note right now from South Loop Elementary School where they have decided that if there is a verdict during school hours, they'll go on lockdown mode just to protect the students and determine what to do from there. We received a note home. Our daughter goes to school near Old St. Pat's, and we received a note that they would also be paying attention during school hours.
And this is all out of an abundance of caution.
It is.
We don't know what the we don't know what the verdict's going to be, so we don't know what the reaction's going to be. And very interestingly and tellingly today in court, the judge gave this jury an option, a middle ground, if you would, that charge of second-degree murder, which sounds awful, but carries with it the possibility of probation in a case like this.
And we have to remember there are two different moments here that could spark controversy. First of all, there is the verdict. And then secondly, there will be the sentencing, which will not be simultaneous.
No.
There will be another sentencing hearing, depending on what the verdict is. Mm-hmm. Right? Unless this is a straight acquittal on all charges, which... It doesn't seem like a better than 50-50 probability, but we'll see. I mean, you never know. What did you think of the closing arguments?
I thought it was interesting that Jason Van Dyke's attorney, Daniel Herbert, did not talk about that third option, that second-degree murder option. He seemed to double down, all or nothing, right? Either convict or don't convict. I thought prosecutors went hard at this notion that Jason Van Dyke somehow went into this altercation spoiling for a fight, saying that he had made up his mind, even making that comment to his partner Joe Walsh, why don't they just shoot him, or words to that effect.
Well,
and that, I think,
let's be very careful about
that.
What he said was, I think we're going to have to shoot him, or... are we going to have to shoot him? There's a question there. It didn't sound to me like we're going to have to shoot this guy, which as it was portrayed in court wasn't like, hey, we're going to have to shoot this guy. More like, we're going to have to shoot this guy, which is very, very different.
Right. And that's why I thought it was so interesting that the prosecutors pushed so hard on that, making it sound premeditated, even though premeditation is not something necessary to convict in this.
And remember the context of that. What they were hearing was that he had slashed a tire. He'd slashed a police vehicle's tire. He was not responding. This had gone on for a couple of blocks now. He was not responding to police commands. And I think that was the concern. I mean, the way I heard it, if I were on the jury listening to this, the way that I heard that based on the evidence that was provided was, because this was fairly new information to all of us, that there was that conversation
right
in the car between the two partners. And it was, we're going to have to shoot this guy. I heard it as, we're going to have to shoot this guy.
Like a disbelief.
Like, I can't.
Can you believe this is getting to this point?
Yes, as opposed to, we're going to have to shoot this guy, which is very different. And, and I think it depends on your life's experience and what your inclinations are here, how you hear that. So I certainly could see that as a watershed moment here for the jury based on their life experience.
Yeah, did the prosecutor push a little too hard in that argument? The other interesting point that Jason Van Dyke's attorney made was, he was suggesting the prosecutors, these are crocodile tears for Laquan McDonald. They said, had Jason Van Dyke not fired, had Laquan McDonald been taken into custody, these same prosecutors, meaning same prosecutor's office, Cook County State's attorney, would be trying Laquan McDonald. They would be charging him. They would be talking about his background. They would be portraying him out.
They would
as
put
a
him
criminal.
Back in that cage.
Put him
in
back in the cage.
That's right.
That was a very specific wording. I'm glad you brought that up,
right. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Ben. We'll more of this, obviously, on WGN TV News. We'll be covering this both on GN Radio and GN TV throughout the afternoon. And if there is a verdict, we'll bring that to you as soon as it occurs. And then the aftermath, whatever that happens to be. Ben, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's check in with Judy Pilak. She's got the WGN News in 2 minutes.
The defendant's authority to use deadly force is not unbridled and not without restraint. The defendant used deadly force when he was wearing the badge, when he was wearing a police uniform, and while he was under the cloak of a police officer. And you know what? When deadly force is used, when it's not necessary, when it's not justified, it is first-degree murder. It's 16 counts of aggravated battery, and it is official misconduct, because no one is above the law.
That's Prosecutor Jody Gleason in the closing argument today of the prosecution in Jason Van Dyke. Here is defense attorney Dan Herbert.
Police are here to serve and protect. Remember I showed you the squad car video. They can't retreat. They can't run away like us. And they have to encounter people that create their own destiny. I told you, Laquan McDonald was the author, the choreographer of this story. And Jason Van Dyke had to be brought into it. So I'm going to ask you, when you go back to the jury room and you start deliberating with your fellow jurors, just remember that, you know, sometimes the right decision is not always the easiest decision. But you owe it to yourself to make the right decision here.
And then the lead prosecutor here is Joseph McMahon. And after, in these kinds of trials, after the prosecution makes its closing argument, there is an additional prosecution closing argument.
Even that biased, self-serving animation shows the indefensible acts of murdering Laquan McDonald. His own animation shows a murder and 5 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm, and it ends early. You know Laquan hits the ground hard and fast after it ends, and you know what happens after they end the video. It's Jason Van Dyke firing bullets, ripping into the flesh of Laquan McDonald 16 times. That's not justified. That's not necessary. That's first-degree murder.
Rich Lenkov is here. He is a partner of Bryce Downey and Lenkov and host of Legal Faceoff and WGN Plus. And in terms of what you were at 26th Street today, you were witnessing all of this. If you were on this jury, what would you do?
The rebuttal was strong. You know, you play the rebuttal. In fact, you played the last few words of McMahon, the prosecutor. It's natural for a jury to be influenced most by what they hear most recent, right? That's just basic common sense. And McMahon's words to end off his about 20 to 25-minute rebuttal were pretty strong. So I think the jury was left with a pretty strong case by the state that this was not justified, that it was not self-defense. So I think that was impactful. Now, you know, the jury obviously will weigh all of the evidence, and just because McMahon went last doesn't mean that that will necessarily be most persuasive. But I was pretty I thought he did a pretty good job in rebuttal.
The jurors were told today in the instructions, and Ro mentioned earlier, a fair point, that they were complicated. There was a lot there to digest, a lot to understand, not being a lawyer, but just a layperson. But one of the things they did give the jury the power to decide here is this lesser charge, the second-degree murder charge. Do you think that makes it easier to get a conviction, or do you think somehow that makes things more difficult? What impact will that have?
I think it gives the jury an out, right? I mean, everyone likes to compromise when possible. I think asking the jury before that instruction to convict a police officer for the first time in the city in 50 years of first-degree murder is a huge thing to ask. Not that the evidence didn't necessarily warrant it, but I think if you give a juror the option of some kind of middle ground, which the second-degree murder charge would be, I think that's very attractive. And, Ro, you asked me what would I do? Mm-hmm. I think they're going to pick that second-degree murder charge. Mm-hmm. I think, You know, it does carry, of course, a lesser sentence. In fact, it could be probation. I think it'll most likely be in the 10-year range, roughly around there. It could be 4 to 20. Unlike a first-degree murder charge, you don't have to serve the entirety of your sentence. In a first-degree murder, it's 20 years to life, and you have to serve 100%.
And there's an add-on, too, for use of a firearm.
Exactly.
But I want to... move backwards here for a second, because this is a police officer who was called by his job. He was assigned, told by the radio communications of the Chicago Police Department to go to that site. When he got out of his car, he had an armed suspect whom he knew had already slashed the tire of a police car, literally had turned against a police SUV and stabbed the tire and then tried to stab the windshield. Unsuccessfully with the windshield. They brought the tire out yesterday, the very end. Dan Herbert rolled it out into the courtroom in front of the jury. This is not an insignificant knife. The Laquan McDonald had closed the gap between he and Jason Van Dyke in a matter of just a few seconds, from 36 feet to 13 feet. And this is all not in dispute. It was not disputed by the prosecution. How is it possible that after ordering him to stop and put down the knife, and Dan Herbert today in his clothes, the defense in his clothes, he had the knife in his hand,
mm-hmm.
and he said this could have all been over, and then he dropped the knife.
It was a powerful moment
on the floor in front of the jury. If he had just done this. How does a jury come back with first-degree murder?
All strong arguments. I think what was very compelling also from the prosecution's argument was the fact that Van Dyke had options. There were several options that not only he could have taken, but that his peers took. You didn't have to look around to see what other options there were. Others who responded, remember, there was almost a dozen other police officers on the scene who did not shoot him.
But none of them were in the direct line.
Well, there was one today he pointed out that was only 15 feet away. And he was looking directly at Laquan McDonald. So the argument goes that there were other options he could have pursued. And, you know, what McMahon said today was his biggest asset was time. He could have waited. Now, obviously, what the defense has said is that there was no time to wait. There was imminent danger. He could have gone to the Burger King. All the things that Van Dyke has said in defense. But I think what was compelling today to the jury was that there was other options. He could have pinned him in with the squad cars. He could have bumped him. He could have waited for the taser. There were other options that he could have pursued. And you heard it now. You played it. You know, 16 shots ripping into his flesh, the terms he used. I think that has some emotional appeal to a jury.
Dan Herbert, the attorney for the defense today, did something. And I want to ask your opinion on whether it was a good thing for Jason Van Dyke, or you think it maybe went the other way. He said if a Boy Scout with a knife was walking down the street, it may have been wrong to shoot. But Laquan McDonald was no Boy Scout, and seemed to give an opening to the prosecution to say, well, based on what you knew about Laquan McDonald, you didn't know enough. I mean, you knew that he was slashing tires and these other things, but it seemed like they took that opening. What was the major difference?
Yeah, I mean, Herbert was not shy about going after McDonald, nor has he been throughout the course of the trial. I mean, he, you know, not in the most eloquent terms, but in a very, I think, way that appeals to a jury. He said he was whacked out on, you know, on drugs, and his eyes were big, and, you know, I think he's trying to paint a picture to the jury of what they would feel like if they were in Van Dyke's shoes. That's obviously the, you know, what the entire case rests on. So I think in attacking McDonald, he is trying to show that, hey, listen, if you're in that position as a juror, if you were that police officer, what would you do? If he's successful in doing that, obviously he's going to get, you know, an acquittal. But the key is whether the state has proven that this was excessive given the threat that was presented to him that day.
I just don't know, in the aftermath of this, how police officers do their job. We talk a lot about what the reaction is going to be in mm-hmm. the community and on the streets of Chicago.
It's true.
I wonder about the reaction of Chicago police, because if you are assigned to go, you have a gun, you've been trained to use the gun, and you are sent out to stop an armed individual. How does one handle that situation when your training protocols, because everything fell within the protocol, everything fell within the training manual here. The 16 shots are not addressed in the training manual, right? The amount of shooting. They don't say stop shooting when you have to stop shooting when you have decided the threat has been neutralized, right? Not when you've run out of bullets. And that to me is going to be a problem. I don't know how police are going to respond. All right, Rich, hold on one second. Let's check in with Judy in the newsroom here for what's happening at the top of the hour.
A very unlucky lottery ticket for an accused bank robber.
Coach Fitz joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning, 7:10, ahead of Northwestern facing Michigan State this weekend in East Lansing.
Rich Lenkoff is with us. He's our legal analyst. Rich, what do you think the likelihood of a mistrial is here?
Very small. I think, maybe 20%. I think that the jury will come back. I think they'll probably come back tomorrow. And I think it's going to be a second-degree murder conviction.
All right. Rich Lenkoff, partner at Price Downing Lenkoff, LLC. Just for tax purposes, host of Legal Face Off on WGN Plus. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate
Thanks,
you being
Rich.
With us.
Appreciate
We've got WGN News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio in 2 minutes.
Time.
Right now, I got a pair of tickets to the Blackhawks home opener on Sunday versus the Leafs. Original six matchup. It's going to be something. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 21st caller joins us.
And you and Cochran will be there.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning.
You guys are buying everybody beer that shows up to your broadcast.
That's so
thank
nice.
You for not mentioning that.
That's awesome.
That is not going to happen. But because, well, it's Sunday, and I believe in temperance on Sundays. That's why.
Sunday fun day?
That's the reason for me. What? Are you okay?
Sorry, I just choked on something there. It's very strange. So when you watch the Bears games and stuff, I thought you've told us stories on occasion that, you enjoy a beer at Soldier Field or...
Listen, these tickets are for the super suite anyway.
Well, they get that's true.
So
our listeners are well hooked up.
Yeah. So you're good either way. Why you do me like that? All right. Tom Skilling doesn't need to listen.
No.
Tom understands what it's like to be temperate on a Sunday, doesn't he? Brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems.
I thought what you were going to come back with was, of course, you're not buying a beer for everybody. You're buying two beers for everybody.
Be careful what you promise publicly.
I know. Happy Thursday, guys.
Although a lot of people on Sunday will not be drinking because they'll be running the marathon or supporting their friends who are running the marathon.
Yes.
Do you drink after the marathon if you're a marathon?
Oh, yeah.
Like late afterwards?
Oh, hell yeah.
During the day, you don't. But then when you're done, you go and...
Yeah, you don't drink before the marathon, I don't think.
Thankfully.
Yeah.
That would be bad.
There will be a few who do, but they probably won't make it the full 26.2.
Well, you never know. It's surprising.
I think they'll be happy with the weather that we've got. They'll probably be upper 50s to start with in the morning, if not around 60. And it won't go up very much because there'll be a lot of cloud cover, maybe a little sprinkle every
That's
now and then. That's perfect. Yeah, so this may be one of the better marathon weather setups that we've had for a while.
Hopefully it'll rain right after the marathon because they always go to bars and restaurants right after and nobody showers.
So, is that true, really?
Yeah.
I after running that, do you think your system would be able to eat anything
well, that's
or
what
drink
I would
anything?
Think. I wouldn't be able to drink after all that.
Yeah, yeah. They're highly tuned runners and alcoholics. I gotta say that I like the Mylar blanket that you get.
Yes.
When you see that and it's like that to me that says everything I need right there. It's like a big piece of tinfoil that you put over yourself and what I do is I go down to the finish line. And I put on, I douse myself in water, and then I put on what looks like it might be, a jogging outfit
right,
of some
you dress
sort.
In running gear.
Yeah. And
you may
then,
or may not have run it.
With big long tube socks that come up to my knees, right, and sandals.
Tape over your chest.
You have like a Napoleon Dynamite look about
you. Yes, exactly.
With the headband.
Headband, my hair all up. And then I get the Mylar thing, and I walk around. I go, but just in the marathon. You know what's amazing is when you see people walking after the marathon, they got their number still on. They got their
metal.
They get a little medal.
Yeah.
For running, right?
I'd wear that for weeks if I got one of those.
And then you got the Mylar blanket, and you're literally walking in Lincoln Park, and you're like, well, you walked all the way up there.
It's true.
I mean,
see people late at night.
This?
Yeah.
Tom and I cannot do this.
No.
I'm just saying that.
No.
I'm just saying.
I'll tell you, you'd have to have a paramedic unit following me, you know, if we were to do that. And probably you too, Ro, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah?
You guys could train for it, though.
Tom and I couldn't drive 26 miles.
We could, and Santa could come down the chimney with a $2 million check tonight,
that doesn't
too.
Mean
you know,
would so. Train for it, but you could. Yeah, right. I have faith in you two. You could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Anna, you.
I do.
You're an army of one.
Let me tell you. Now, remember that Jim Fix guy? He was a big.
Yeah.
He wrote those books in the 70s or 80s about he lost all this weight and he'd gotten sick and he decided he was going to run marathons and it was going to be great.
Didn't he die at 46 or
something? Yeah, and then he died.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then you're like, well, wait a second. You know, he's written books and he's on TV and everybody's going, oh, look at him. He's in the best of health. And then he keels over.
You know, it's funny. Bill Maher was talking about that a couple of months ago. At the end of his show, he was writing down all these health people who have written books telling us all how to live and looking at when they died.
Yeah.
And he went through the pictures. There were about six or eight of them. And the last shot was of David Crosby, who is like 85, doing just fine. He's had his issues with...
Yeah, drugs,
with drink and
weight.
Alcohol. Right, and he's doing great.
Right, alcohol, like heroin, has you know, sells his sperm to people.
Right,
I mean, you know, whatever he's doing, and then look at him. Look at him.
Right,
facial hair.
So don't
he's
worry.
All kinds of things.
You guys are doing it all right.
Yeah, no,
that's right.
Now we're really
that kind of stuff gives you the inspiration you need.
Absolutely,
what you're doing.
In that single bit. I felt there was hope.
Sure. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of. I don't know how to do this. I don't like 26.2 miles. If someone said to me, we're inviting you to a party. I go, where is it? And they say it's in east Beam. Uh-huh. Ville. Yeah. How far is it? Oh, it's 26.2 miles from here. Oh, I can't make it.
Imagine walking that.
Well, forget the driving. I'm just saying I wouldn't drive it. Is it on the Stevenson? The Eisenhower? They go to Highland Park. Highland Park is like 20 miles, right? It's even further. I think it's even closer than 26.2 miles. But let's just say from downtown Highland Park. I don't know, like my friends who live up there. They go, hey, come on up. I go, it's a little far.
I know. Ro gets tired thinking about driving it,
right.
Let alone running it.
Right,
you know,
run it.
And me too.
Right.
I know where you're coming
right.
from.
Right, and then there's some guy from East Africa who runs it in 1 hour and 54 minutes. And again, like you couldn't do that on a Friday afternoon on a Kennedy.
No.
And you're like, how does he do it? And then he stops, and then they interview him, and he's like, there's really no problem. And he has a cigarette, and how do these people do this?
I don't know.
It's a different thing.
They are super people.
I'd like to see you two do a 5K. Have you both done a 5K?
No, I can't run. I've got a thing. I've never been able to run.
Sickness.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, from running. It's like too much up and down.
You get motion sickness from running?
Yeah.
Okay, now that I've never heard of before.
Have you ever done the Stairmaster? I'm like always passing out, like 10 steps.
See, my problem is I can't tell whether it's running, you know, the running that does that or just the overexertion
that
brings on the illness. Yeah. Yeah,
we used to have to run the six. Part of the Illinois physical fitness thing when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, first of all, you had to be able to shoe a horse in, 15 minutes or something.
Is that right?
But
they did that in your high school?
In my high school, yeah. You had to be able.
Well, you're
because I graduated in 1905. So the point here's the point that you used to have to run the 600. Meter, you know,
right.
like a 600 meter thing, you know, you're timed for it. It's part of the whole thing. You have to pull up, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And the 600 meter thing, and I, you know, in my gym class, there were like 30 people in it or whatever.
Right.
I was always like second to last behind the one girl who was like an amputee, right?
Aww.
And I mean, it was like, and I'm like, and I would get in and my lungs would hurt and I'd be like totally, and you know, my coaches would look at me like, what is wrong with you?
I just could not run
in little spurts. I cannot endure it for more than, you know, like a couple hundred yards.
Isn't it the truth? I used to go to the YMCA and they had what they called 1,000-point contests. And you would, you know, shimmy your way up these ropes to the ceiling and all. And then you do the jumping that you do? They put the little barrier up and you were to jump over it. And
Like a high jumping.
And you know, I remember in one of our gym classes, one of our instructors was upside down on one of those ropes, and the rope broke.
Oh, no.
And he nearly broke his neck. They brought the ambulance in. I never looked at that whole exercise the same again. It scared me. And then I remember one of the people on jumping tripped and broke a leg on that. And so I thought, no, I think maybe yeah. I'll just kind of...
Yeah.
Take this a little slow. You know?
Yeah, I look to say, I'll meet you at the bar, is what I always like to say to people afterwards.
And we'll discuss it.
Yeah, like I belong to a health. I belong to a health club.
Yeah,
and then they go, well, how often are you there? I go, well, I eat there quite a bit.
Right. Bro,
it's the same with me. I stop belonging because those social health clubs, you just end up socializing and figure out all the reasons why I shouldn't work out. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm out of time. It's been really great.
And then there's all these people who are in like amazing shape.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I know.
Every once in a while, I'll run into Lou Kanellis, who looks at this health club, who literally is, he squirts testosterone out of the top of his head. And
he's in great shape.
And like a lawn sprinkler. And it's all testosterone. And he's got he's perfectly tan. He's got these bulging muscles. And he's got
great energy.
It's criminal.
Right. And then his other buddies are around him. Oh, let's go lifting. You know, and I'm like, lifting? I'm lucky if I get on the treadmill.
Yeah. It's difficult taking the trash out.
I know.
I'm
on it.
That's why we go and cheer all the marathoners, because we realize what an amazing accomplishment it is.
I really do.
I tear up sometimes when I see all the causes people are running for and the stories behind their run. Oh,
I had
beautiful.
A professor when I was going to school up in Madison who would run around Lake Mendota up there, and that was just
big.
That's big, just amazing, and I marveled at that.
I've run around my bathtub before when I had one of those freestanding ones.
Yeah.
Careful, the floor's slippery.
Well, I had to get around the back of it to see if there was something that was leaking, so I ran around.
Right. Well,
so
you
one time
the,
it did.
You had the turtles in there,
it's the only body of water I've ever, even a pool I don't run around, because I'm told, don't run.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the weather, Tom.
Yeah. Hey, the system we've got coming in tomorrow incorporates some of the remnants of Hurricane Rosa, which was that storm that came off the Pacific, went into Baja California, and went up through Phoenix. They had record flooding in the desert southwest the last couple of days. So some of the upper air energy with that is jumping across the mountains out of the plains, and now it's taking a big gulp of Gulf moisture. And that's the system that's going to come in with clouds and rain here. In scattered fashion later tonight, but picking up tomorrow and tomorrow night. It'll come in waves. It won't be raining continuously, but we could get, an inch and a half of rain, and a few spots may get more than that, particularly as you head north. So kind of a wet, unsettled pattern, but we've got 80 degrees coming back again by the time we get to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
It's a little warm, doesn't it? It's very warm.
Yeah. Last night I had my windows open, and I thought, wow, I can't wait for this cool front to come in. It was a little warm.
You know what I did last night? No. It was the craziest thing, because it was warm last night, right?
Yes, it was.
That was probably the dew point was high, too.
Yes, it was.
I don't want to have to tell you about your business.
That's true. Those dew points will do it to you every time, I know.
I was walking down Wacker. Mm-hmm. Wacker Drive, going west from Michigan Avenue, and so I saw in the distance, you see the Merchandise Mart, right? Because it's a big building, etc. And they were projecting this these moving images on the entire face, of the building
on the Merchandise Mart.
It's,
wow,
a city
and it's
thing.
Spectacular. And I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know why they're doing it. That's I think an equally good question.
But how cool?
It's art on the Mart. It's called Art on the Mart, and they're going to be, it's like pyrotechnics and moving images, but there's also artwork.
It's like a laser, it's like a laser dot. And then I'm thinking, if you're working in one of those offices, most of those are showrooms, but then,
you better not look out the window, right?
Because that thing's coming right at you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a
really
series.
Cool.
They're going to keep doing it with different artwork. They have
a great idea.
Huge video
that
projection
really
and all kinds of, it's just really cool. The mayor launched it, I think, earlier this week.
More to come. We're up here on the Northwest side, so we don't see that. And I'm really sorry about that, because that sounds like...
Yeah, you're just waiting for a Halloween decoration to break out. That's what you're waiting for. This is, and over here, yeah. I mean, this is some crazy... so busy last night, and there's so many hotels. Uh-huh. On one block, there's four hotels on Wacker. One block has four hotels.
That's true.
It's like, it's crazy. And the tourists were out. And mm-hmm. then I walked down the Riverwalk.
Oh, I love the Riverwalk.
And it was beautiful. I'm like, this is, it looks like the plans that you see, like, in the future, Chicago will look like this. Yeah. But it's really what was going on. And I'm like, you know what? As much as people want to criticize the mayor about the river and all this, what a boon that is to tourism and people who go spend their money here and then leave town before they use our services, is all you want out of tourists.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the weather was perfect for that last night. Do you know that 88 yesterday, Bill Snyder checked through the records, that's one of the sixth warmest late season days we've ever had in 148 years of weather records. And it was the second warmest October 3rd on the books around here. The only one warmer was 64 years ago in 1954 when it hit 91. We 88 yesterday. That's pretty remarkable.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Ro.
All right.
See you later. Bye,
thanks, Tom.
Anna.
Let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom?
Tronk tanks.
Hey, Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
All right, coming up, another chance. We got another chance this hour and another final chance next hour to rip us off for these tickets to the Super Suite on Sunday at the Hawks home opener. And I believe that Violetta is going to be there as well now. I've just been told.
I will be there.
Yes. Oh, dear. Yeah, she'll be serving in the Super Suite.
It'll be so much fun. I have a heavy pour, so.
Yes. Yes. You should see a doctor about that. All right, here we go. Stay tuned. It's all coming your way. Don't anybody move.
Sweet.
All right, let's talk about this because I would like to know. We're looking outside, and mm-hmm. we're seeing the Chicago police already preparing for some sort of an eventuality downtown for protests. We've heard all kinds of different ideas here and different rumors of things that might happen. And we thought we might want to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about when it comes to police prepare for these things. And Jim Maurer is with us. He is the former First Deputy Superintendent and Chief of Patrol for the Chicago Police Department.
Nice.
And was in charge of security at a number of major events, including the G20, right, when they were here, Jim?
Yeah, I think of that or NATO. I can't remember which one.
Yeah,
but it was the same.
Doesn't matter. Yeah,
kind
doesn't
of big
matter.
Deal.
Yeah, and now that was more than a decade ago. Is there a different protocol now for handling these things than there was then? Because that was very successful.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly they're doing. But the biggest thing is you have to have manpower. I mean, and they've already gone. I think I've been told they've gone to 12-hour shifts and days off canceled. So that'll give them additional bodies because, you know, when you figure out the manning factor, you know, it's almost one for one. In other words, one officer is off, you need a full officer to replace them. Years and years ago, it used to be like 3-1, you know, or 2-1. So, you know, one guy would be relief. So obviously they're concerned and they've got a lot of bodies, and bodies are really what you need. You need a big presence to deter some of this stuff. And like you said earlier, there's a number of locations that, you know, could be impacted by whatever the decision is. And either way, it's probably going to result in some kind of activity.
Yeah, you wonder, no matter what the verdict, it seems that there could be protests and that kind of thing. And hopefully they are peaceful and people voice their concerns that way. But you already have the Chicago Marathon this weekend, which requires a heavy police presence anyway, doesn't it? And it's, how does that affect
things?
Yes,
and well, again, it's when they're running thin, and I know that when we had the NATO or G20, whatever it was, we enlisted the sheriff's help and the state police, and they both provided additional manpower, especially around the buildings, the state building and the county building. At that time, they had the march was planned to go from, oh my God, it was. They marched all the way down, I think it was
Columbus, right?
Randolph.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they went up to, then they went north on Michigan Avenue. And what we did was we lined the area almost shoulder to shoulder. And then as the march would pass, those officers that were back would fold into the next, you know, up to the front. The march is a little different than a big You know, March is pretty predictable. You got an idea where they're going to, where people are going to be. Right. But this, you got the, I saw a poster. Somebody sent me a picture of a poster where they allegedly posted Van Dyke's home address and there's things about, you know.
Yeah, that's flying around. That's flying around. And we've been able to confirm that, that at least the poster that we've seen is not accurate. And whether it is an attempt to incite people to, you know, to take revenge on his family or whatever it is, which is what the poster is articulating, that it's incorrect, and that if people are seeing that and wish to take advantage of that, they'd be not only you know, doing the wrong thing on every level, right. They would add to the levels that they're doing the wrong, they would be in the wrong place. And, you know, you never know who's behind something like that in a moment like this, whether it's just somebody who wants to cause trouble. One of the things I think is most interesting about your experience in the G20 and then when the G8 was here a couple of years ago is that you get all these, as I like to say, and that they've been saying since 1968, and you were there too, that the outside agitators show up, and these are people who just want to cause trouble. This, I don't think, is going to have as much of that because it's, you know, at least on day one, because we're not sure when day one is going to be. Day one could be as early as today. So we don't, you know, we don't know. But in terms of, you know, over time, though, that becomes its own, you know, it's...
It gives them a chance to organize, you know, for something, some big demonstration. And, well, it's the weekend's coming up, starting tomorrow, so there's all kinds of potential.
And then, and Jim, the other thing that people worry about in the city is that if there is the demonstrations downtown or wherever they happen to be, that police service in their neighborhoods is not going to be as good. How does the city handle that?
Well, I think the way the if I read the order correctly, somebody sent me a copy of the superintendent's letter to the troops, and it said, you know, it advised the watch commanders and commanders to hold their troops over even beyond the 12 hours authorized. I think they'll be able to, you know, there won't be a big drain. If you've got 12-hour shifts, there won't be a big drain in some of these areas that might be normally. For example, up in this, you know, whenever they have something where they used to pull CAC teams from the north side to, like, Inglewood just for, you know, for additional coverage. Well, that did leave you without a CAC team up in the north. I think the way he's got it laid out now, that wouldn't be necessary. They may be pulling CAC teams, but they'll certainly have enough bodies in districts like Jefferson Park and Albany Park and far southwest side, most districts that cover, you know, and of course you've got to cover the areas that have high crime areas as well.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's kind of where I'm talking about is, you know, those areas, whether it's, you know, the 5th District or 11 or any of those places that are hot spots, that people will think, well, all right, all the police are going somewhere else, so this is an opportunity to create mayhem here or do whatever it is that you want to go do, you know? I mean, that's the problem.
I wouldn't count on that because, like I say, I think that with 12-hour shifts and additional days off canceled, I think they'll be able to cover all their normal activities. And the units that will be called in for the demonstration are usually, I'm not familiar with some of the structure they have now, but I'm sure they still have certain units that can be pulled in as a group, and, you know, they should be well trained, as we were for NATO. We went out of our way to make sure that the officers knew what they were going to face, so we didn't have chaos from you know, officers not knowing what to do.
But, Jim, let me ask you, we got about a minute left here, but I want to ask you this, that if this comes back as a first degree murder conviction for a Chicago police officer, How does that affect the police officers, not only in the, I mean, I would imagine the impact's going to be very difficult for them in the first hours of dealing with celebrating rioters or whatever may be, you know, the reaction here. But then even in the weeks and months afterwards, I mean, how do police go and do their job?
Well, I know that things seem to be, the police seem to be under the gun all over the country these days. But you've got to remember that basically police officers, they may be prohibited or not prohibited, but they may not be as aggressive as they used to, as they would be, stop and frisk, all that stuff that's been, you know, bannered around. They may not be doing that to put themselves in jeopardy. But when there's an emergency call or any kind of a call for personal help, I don't know a policeman that would ever ignore that. They would go, regardless of what the sentiment is. Your obligation is to protect the public and to protect their rights. And I, like I say, the 60s, like I told you earlier, was no piece of cake. But I never saw anybody lay down and not do their job because they were being protested against, or you know, or we had all these, you know, court decisions, and now we've got everybody, you know, second-guessing everything that a policeman does. But you're still going to have those, the vast, vast majority of officers that are out there in a car are going to respond, and they may feel very badly about whatever the decision is, but I don't think, you know, I think everybody has to make up their own mind about, you know, what happened there. And so, you know, it's not, it certainly it'll have a little effect on morale to a certain extent, but it's not going to be so bad that officers aren't going to do their job. I mean, right. I spent 41 years there, and I've never seen, I mean, cowardice is not something that anybody wants to be labeled as having, you know, mm-hmm. that you're not going to respond to a call.
Got it. Jim, thank you very much. Jim Maurer, a Chicago police legend who was once the, he used to call him the super chief because he was a deputy superintendent and chief of patrol. So that's.
Yeah, chief of patrol deputy, yeah. So it was quite a ride. I miss it. There's times I miss it the most when, you know, you'd like to be up there just if nothing else, just to back up the officers, just have somebody pat them on the back and say, you're doing a great job, keep it up.
Yeah,
because they're only as good as the off bosses are only as good as the people around them.
Well, thank you for your service to this city, my friend. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ro. Good luck.
Thanks.
Talk to you.
Jim Maurer. All right, let's find out from Judy Palak what's happening on the WGN Newsroom.
It's no joke. Amy Schumer making her voice heard in D.C.
I'm Ro, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Yep, and here's something else. Steve Cochran, let's talk about him for a second. Tomorrow morning, Entertainment Tonight's Lauren Zima joins Steve and the entire Cochran show.
I loved her drink in the 70s.
The Zima? I just had one of those not too long ago in Michigan. It still isn't good. The latest happenings in the world of celebrities that she'll also be talking about.
Why did you have a Zima in Michigan? Do they require you to have that in Michigan?
I don't know. Someone brought Zima. I'm not sure if it was a gag or a joke to the house, and we all hung out and we had a little Zima, and it was not very good. And I didn't remember it to be good either. Still not good.
Is it alcohol?
Oh, yeah. It's Zima. It's like, you should look it up. It's something I'd imagine you'd be drinking. Troy Murray is joining us right now. He is our Chicago Blackhawks color commentator on the radio broadcast of Chicago Blackhawks right here on WGN, the greatest radio hockey team in North America. Mm-hmm. I don't speak any other languages, so I have no idea what's going on in the Czech Republic or in Russia. But I can tell you this, right now, it doesn't get any better than Weidman and Murray. Just doesn't.
Does not.
Just doesn't. All right, hey, can you tell us, I know you're getting ready for the game in Ottawa. I'm assuming they're flying and not driving or pedicabbing the guy up. We had to get the Rockford goalie up because our backup is hurt.
Yeah, it was an interesting morning here in Ottawa. Antoine Forsberg got a hand injury, and they, you know, right away they had Rockford was in Cleveland, and so to play some games this weekend, I think it was. So they had to get Colin out of Cleveland, get him into Ottawa. As it stands right now, he's not scheduled to land. You know, Ottawa's not a popular place as far as a lot of flights coming in there, especially from Cleveland. So I don't know where he ended up going to get into Ottawa, but he's not going to land until 6:30.
Oh,
they have an emergency goaltender in place to come out and take the warm-up, but Cam Ward is healthy, and he's going to be the starter tonight. So that's the good news.
Well, wait. Now, is it the emergency guy? Is it like a guy who's on the team? There's always like one designated executive or something that has to play goal?
Or is it that accountant guy? Well, remember
Mark
him?
Mark Bernard is the vice president of, you know, Rockford and general manager or whatever. He was a goaltender, so he is in the past at times if they needed something for practice.
Yeah.
He was more than willing to suit up. But this is kind of like the Scott Foster thing of last year,
yes,
where they're getting that extra goaltender, and it sounds like because of the time restraints, whatever, that Colin's not going to get here to take part in warm up. So the spare goaltender, the third emergency goaltender that could be used on either side, is going to take the warm-ups with the Blackhawks. That's what we've heard, but you know, we'll see what happens once the players come on to
the ice.
They
could have driven him.
Going on.
I mean, I don't think these guys carry their passports with them, but they could have driven him probably from Cleveland to you know, to get him there faster than like 6:30 because
sure.
You know, Ottawa's. Although you know, you ever watch that that college football game on ESPN? College football pregame show on ESPN? They got that wheels up, and it looks like they fly everywhere. And, you know, you get them a little you know, King Air, and you get them over the thing. I mean, it's like. In a situation, it's just crazy when you think about the logistics of sports, that things go as smoothly as they do is always kind of amazing to me.
It is.
And you know,
well,
in a moment
it
like
certainly
this,
didn't take them long. I was actually sitting up in the stands watching it when everything happened on the ice, and it was, you know, it was 5 minutes later that Stan was on the phone and Mark Bernard and Tony Ullman, the team services guy, all working together trying to figure out how they can get Colin from Cleveland, you know, and you know, I don't even know where they were as far as the team, if they were in Cleveland at the time, traveling to Cleveland. I don't know, but pretty amazing how quickly they can get some things done when they need to.
In that, you know, for Rockford and guys in that league, in the AHL, do they fly or do they take buses?
Well, for Rockford, it depends. You know, obviously they have some close teams that they play, but they will fly. There's no doubt they will fly to some of the teams that they'll play, and but they will take some long bus rides as well.
Yeah, but they fly
not
commercial, or do they fly? They have their own plane.
No, they don't have their own plane.
Oh man! Why is this? Oh my God! Is that hockey equipment in that carry-on? Yeah, that is pretty. I know you want to be in hockey. This is all of show business. You want to do it, you got to make some sacrifices. I totally get it. All right, well, call. Great
that's
game tonight. We're really looking forward
to
it.
Here.
I know what. Right, I'm almost afraid if I was in Ottawa, they put me in goal. All right, Troy, thank you
we'll
very much. Appreciate
Troy.
It. All right, see
all right,
you tonight.
Go Hawks.
I got another pair of tickets right now to be caller. If you're caller number 21 at 312-981-7200, you win a pair of tickets to Blackhawks home opener in the Super Suite.
Super Suite.
Super Suite.
Woohoo. Sweet.
Don't miss this. This is amazing. Caller number 21, 312-981-7200. You get to meet us. Well, I'll be the Cochrane will be there. I'll be there. Violetta's going to be there now. We've been told.
Yay.
Look out. You'll end up in our Insta story.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. Oh, good. Or unlucky. Let's just say that Judy Pilek is standing by. She's got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio in 2 minutes. I just want to get to the breaking news there with you, Judy, if I can, for a second. So are we being told that they are breaking for the day? What are you hearing exactly?
Yeah, Eric Rung is there, and he's hearing that they're going to break for the day.
Can we get Eric on the phone, please? I know we're going to do a top five here, too. But I'd like to get some detail on this. And then the question is, will the judge sequester them?
Now, earlier I had read that a pool reporter asked the judge if they would be sequestered, and he said, I always sequester my juries.
Yeah, I heard that too.
So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
I would assume that, I'm going to assume that they would do that.
Right.
I mean, that seems like the smart thing to do. There's so much stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they sequester most murder trial juries at 26th Street anyway.
Yeah.
We don't know where they put them up. We don't want to know where they put them up. But I just always imagine it's one of those places on Cicero on your way to Midway, which always scares me. You're like
the coachman.
Or like, right, exactly. Where you always thought.
Not that I know any hotels on Cicero.
Oh, interesting.
You wonder if people went to like hotels.com, like, honey, I got this great deal. We're going to spend the weekend in Chicago, and I got this close to the airport, and it's like $39 a night. Can you imagine?
Free parking.
It says right on there, jury deal.
Jury deal.
Murder special.
Oh, man, I know. So we'll just have to see what happens here. But there is some action. There's some rustling around in the courthouse
But it does not appear to be a verdict.
Right. Yeah, I would not imagine that they would have a verdict
secret.
Tonight.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody was anticipating that. All right. We'll get Eric Rung on the phone here in
Perfect.
Just a second. Let's get started here, though.
Let's do it.
The most important part of the day, which is, you know, there is only one part of the day that really makes any kind of sense to anybody. Isn't that the truth?
That is very true. Yeah. And
it's time to live on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
Number five.
Chuck Schumer issued a strong condemnation of the FBI investigation into Brett Kavanaugh in a lengthy speech on the Senate floor. Schumer ripped the FBI probe, claims that the Supreme Court nominee's investigation is incomplete.
According to Dr. Ford's lawyers and Ms. Ramirez's lawyers, there were many, many witnesses they wished to be interviewed, and they said they were not interviewed. They should have been. Why not? And what limits were placed on the FBI so that they couldn't do a full and thorough investigation? The word is it was the White House, importuned by some of the Republican Senate staffers here. Well, the White House has two choices. They can admit it, or if they deny it, they should at very minimum make the directive that they sent to the FBI public.
All right. Now, that did not make Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee happy.
No, I can't.
Especially
imagine.
The committee chairman, Chuck Grassley.
The minute I read about who the person was in the Feinstein letter, Dr. Ford, I read about her name in the paper. We got on it right away to provide the form she wanted. And in turn, we provided the same forum for Kavanaugh. But what I've been dealing with since July the 10th, the downhill slope that Schumer's put us on, is really dealing with a demolition derby. And they just about destroyed a good person to be on the Supreme Court.
Seems the path for Kavanaugh is solidifying, though, this afternoon as two of the key senators involved, who we've been waiting to hear how they'll vote. Jeff Flake, Senator Collins, are both said things about how there was no corroboration. They viewed the FBI documents and seem to at least give interviews hinting that they will support the nomination.
I think it's likely. I think you're likely to see that go through. And then for a vote on Saturday. So we'll... You know, the final vote, there'll be a procedural vote tomorrow and then a final vote on Saturday. So I think they'll get through the procedural vote. I mean, the final vote is the only one that really confirms him.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to see what happens there. But then Orrin Hatch.
Oh.
Who, you know, Orrin Hatch is a lion of the Senate, as they say. You know, he's one of those guys been there forever, and he was always perpetually tan. Now he's... he's older now. I mean, it makes me feel older.
He doesn't tolerate things well either.
No, and he's kind of a little quieter. He used to be a little bit more robust mm-hmm. in his approach to things. He had one of those moments where he got mauled on an elevator.
Why aren't you brave enough to talk to us and exchange it with us? Don't you wave your hand at me. I wave my hand at you.
When you grow up, I'll be like...
When I grow up,
we grow up.
You
and
I grow up.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The optics weren't good, but that's a tough thing.
Glad we're all getting along these days.
Oh, gee. But if you watch that video, you'll see what people are upset about it, because he sort of waves them away and tells them to grow up. And they are, some of them are talking about sex.
Did he mean grow up to his age?
Yeah, right. When you get to be my age, I'm allowed to handle this perfectly.
All right. We're being told right now that the judge has just been in the courtroom, and he has told the jury that they can stop deliberating for the night, but they are going to be sequestered.
Okay.
This is now what we are told here in the Van Dyke trial. So they are being sequestered.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be interesting to see if they want to continue to deliberate tonight. They do have that option to continue to, you know, get dinner and deliberate tonight from there, and then go to their hotel to be sequestered. Hmm. Unless they want to go to their hotel now and be, you know, it's at 5 o'clock. You know how you're on the road and you're not going to, it's like, well, why not just keep working? So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's up to the jury. I mean, these are people doing. I would never tell a jury what to do. Because those are the people who they're the people who deserve all of our respect in a moment like this.
They do, and we should respect whatever their verdict is.
And you never know when you might find yourself on one of those.
True.
All right. Let us now check in at...
Number four.
So, obviously, this is all going on. Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke on trial jurors are being sequestered. Deliberations are continuing. They will continue into a second day, it does appear. Let's listen to a little bit about what happened here today in the trial. Jody Gleason, who is a prosecutor, this was her closing argument.
The defendant's authority to use deadly force is not unbridled and not without restraint. The defendant used deadly force when he was wearing the badge, when he was wearing a police uniform, and while he was under the cloak of a police officer. And you know what? When deadly force is used, when it's not necessary, when it's not justified, it is first-degree murder. It's 16 counts of aggravated battery, and it is official misconduct, because no one is above the law.
Dan Herbert is the defense attorney.
Police are here to serve and protect. Remember I showed you the squad car video. They can't retreat. They can't run away like us. And they have to encounter people that create their own destiny. I told you, Laquan McDonald was the author, the choreographer of this story. And Jason Van Dyke had to be brought into it.
All right.
WGN TV has said breaking in the last few minutes that the jury had asked for a transcript before they, you know, this announcement about the sequestering. They'd asked for a transcript of the testimony of Jason Van Dyke's partner, remember Walsh, who was brought up, and it was hard to tell exactly who he was helping the most, whether it was the prosecution or the defense. Seemed to give a lot out.
He was a prosecution witness.
That's absolutely right, but remember what he said. That he reasonably believed that McDonald was a threat.
And that you had to see it from his angle. And he was right behind Van Dyke. And they said, well, would you have taken a shot? And he said, yes, but Van Dyke was in the way. Mm-hmm. So this is a... we'll just have to see what... There are a couple of other things that happened in his testimony, too, though. And now in the aftermath of this testimony, it was revealed by another witness that there was a conversation between Walsh and Van Dyke in the car in which Walsh had uttered the words, we're going to have to shoot this guy.
That's right.
Which could be read in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it seemed that it was read like, oh, my God, we're going to have to shoot this guy. As opposed to, we're going to shoot this guy. So that's they may be looking at that before
that
it's all said.
Could be
as
the
well.
Part they're looking at. They didn't explain that.
Right. Well, if they're asking for the Walsh testimony, it's not that. It'll be that's in another piece of testimony. But it'll be interesting to see how much more they ask for, or if they go back tonight now that they realize they're going to be sequestered. If they go back tonight and they continue to deliberate, or they take the rest of the evening off and then reconvene tomorrow morning.
Can I give you a little bit more on what is happening in the courtroom right
yes.
now?
Mm-hmm.
So one of Van Dyke's attorneys telling the judge that his daughter was threatened at school today, and Van Dyke started to cry.
The attorney's daughter or Van Dyke's daughter?
The attorney's daughter, but then Van Dyke in the courtroom started to cry. That's from Eric Rung, who's there.
Yeah. All right.
And I'm assuming that he made the announcement because maybe the judge wanted to know about any threats or...
All right. Now, we'll get Eric on the phone here coming up in just
yeah,
a few minutes
like
and
several
get more
developments.
Detail. All right. In the meantime, we'll go back to the top five right after. Judy, what else is happening in the newsroom?
Well, a sequestered jury, a waiting public, and a city getting ready.
All right. Top five continues.
Number three.
The term higher education taking on a new meaning in Van Buren County, Michigan, after police say a cheerleader allegedly put some little extra in the brownies she passed out at the football
Uh-oh.
Team practice.
Principal mentioned that they were getting some tips in about some possible brownies that may have been laced with marijuana oil. I've read about things, you know, across this country. It's not happened anything that I know of in this area. I've been an officer a long time, and whenever you think you've heard it all, you know, something just about daily, you know, comes up like, wow.
You know, this was at the homecoming after the game. This was actually at the homecoming,
mm-hmm.
and she was running for homecoming queen.
Oh, so she's trying to get votes.
Yeah, unclear if that worked.
Number two.
Are we about to see the last of Chris Evans as Captain America? Sure sounds that way, based on a tweet he just posted about wrapping up his work on the fourth Avengers movie, calling it an emotional day. You can't kill Captain America.
No.
No, they can't.
No, they can't.
They just told me, yes, they can. Is that what they're doing? Are they killing Captain America?
He's got a shield.
He's giving us the thumbs up.
How are they going to kill him?
Yeah, he's got a shield. Oh, come on now.
He's unkillable.
Can't kill a guy with a shield. Everybody knows that.
Can't kill Captain America.
I don't like what's going on here.
Country's going to hell.
I know. See, now that would be really... That's bad timing.
We need Captain America in these trying days.
Boy, do we ever. More than ever.
Yeah. What, is Captain China going to kill him? What's going to happen there?
Captain North Korea going to kill
Russia?
Him?
All right. You know what? This is Eric. Is that what you're telling me? All right. Eric Rung is joining us. Hold on. I'm being told to go to this here. Eric, all right. So what's happening in the courtroom right now?
Some pretty big developments here. The judge brought the court back into session, and Jason Van Dyke wasn't here. Just one of his attorneys was here. The judge got very upset, wondering where he was, why he left the courthouse today. And his attorney said that it was because there was a threat on one of Jason Van Dyke's children. And the judge, again, said, what evidence do you have about this at all? And Jason Van Dyke then came in very quickly, went right up to the judge and told him that story. He said, I want to see credible evidence about this by tomorrow, or I'm going to revoke your bail. He said, it's very important that you're here. And then Jason Van Dyke sat down, and the judge, you could tell, was very upset, and that Jason Van Dyke actually had some tears coming down his face while he was talking to the judge, and after the judge said that he could revoke his bail for the rest of the deliberations here, which... you know, obviously we don't know how much longer that could be. They are done for the night. The judge did say that, and they are going to sequester the jury in this case.
All right, and they will begin deliberations again tomorrow morning, we're assuming?
Tomorrow morning, that's right.
And the jury also asked for something, Eric. We just heard, I saw WGN TV reporting.
Yes.
There's something significant there.
Yeah, they asked for Van Dyke's partner's, Joe Walsh's testimony. He'll remember he was called as a state witness, but by all accounts was really bolstered Van Dyke's account of what happened back in October of 2014, saying that he felt very threatened by Laquan McDonald and that he, in fact, thinks that Jason Van Dyke acted appropriately given the threat that they perceived that night.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So they asked for the transcripts of his testimony.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We'll get some legal analysis of this coming up after Judy's News at the bottom of the hour here. Thank you, Eric Rung in the courtroom in 26th Street
thank
for
you,
us.
Eric.
Judy's News in two.
Now, this started downhill very quickly on about July the 10th when Schumer said that we're going to do everything we can to stop this nomination. And you can look back 87 days and you can see that everything but whether he's qualified to serve has been brought up. I've tried to commit, and I think I've carried out what I promised immediately, that we were going to have a fair and thorough process.
Now, we get a lot of angry old men in Washington today. Did you see that when they when the Senate leadership got together, they had a press conference.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, it's like they canceled shuffleboard, right? It was like, hey, wait a second.
Yeah.
Where's my applesauce? I don't like the chunky applesauce. That was really kind of what it felt like today. That was it. And Grassley was all mad.
Yeah.
And then Orrin Hatch is getting yelled at by ladies in the elevator. And he's like, I'm not going to get flaked. You grow up. Do you have that? Can we have that?
Yeah,
let me hear that clip.
You got to hear. That's worth hearing again.
Goofy.
And he waved him off.
Why aren't you brave enough to talk to us and exchange it with us? Don't you wave your hand at me. I wave my hand at you.
When you grow up, I'll be ready.
When I
you
grow up.
So triggered.
Is that recess on a playground? Is that what I just heard? I mean, it's
in this
crazy
day and age, you just don't, like, everybody's so on edge. You can't say something like that.
And when they then they said Schumer got arrested today in Washington, and it was the wrong Schumer. It was Amy Schumer.
Oh,
Amy Schumer
well, she's
got
a relative.
Arrested. Yes, gets arrested for she was protesting.
Did somebody wave their hand at her and she got upset?
That might have been her yelling at Orrin Hatch.
Yeah. Grow up, Amy.
Grow up! I wave my hand at you!
Nobody waves their hand at me. I'm the hand waver.
Stop
right here.
Hand waving.
It's just everyone behaved. Said grow up, a U.S. senator. It was kind of struck me just demeaning.
I would just ask you. All right, hold on. We're going to bring Pat Brady in because he's our political and sometimes our legal analyst. But we'll get to. I have a question about Van Dyke too for you. So hold on. We got a lot to get to here with Pat. But before we ask you any questions, and I suggest that you stand down after I ask this question and act like you're not here. Try to get into the wallpaper when I ask this. But I'd like to ask from the women on this program, from the lady folk on this program, when a guy does say that, when the sense of dismissal goes on here, it gets your back up, right?
Oh, yes. Just a bit.
I mean,
after all, that's what it's all about, right? What have we been talking about?
Is that what this is all about?
Yes. The lack of dismissal. Grow up. Suck it up. We don't want to hear about it.
Right. And do you feel like that Dr. Ford experienced that too? Is that your take on that? I mean, when you're watching her now, actually, we don't get to see her now, but the idea that it was like, all right, yeah, we heard enough from you, so it's good night. You know, that's it. Well, FBI did their investigation. They couldn't prove anybody. Nobody changed their story, so we're just going to move on. Is that justice or is that dismissal?
Anna?
It's a tough one because, you know, what the senators are clinging to right now is that there's no corroboration of any of these. So that's what you keep hearing. You heard Jeff Flake say it. You heard some of these others who are on the fence say that. There's no corroboration in the FBI's report.
But I'm deeply...
That's what they were looking for.
I'm deeply disturbed by the reports yesterday that Democrats kind of insinuating, because they can't really talk about these reports that are confidential, mm-hmm. that in those previous six FBI investigations... There were some issues about drinking and possible misconduct.
Yep.
Well, nothing
that would be criminal, but I mean, it just, you got to take the whole picture.
Okay.
Right?
So what I'm trying to get to here, and again, Pat, remain quiet. what I'm trying to get to is I'm not asking you to comment on the actual news events here. And I know that, you know, Judy, you're a news person, so I know you want to, you know, maintain that. Mm-hmm. But I'm asking you to comment on how you feel as you're watching this kind of thing. Do you feel like women are under peril, or women are causing their own problems, or what is your reaction?
For the first time in my life, I'm mad.
Okay.
I'm mad, and I feel like everyone needs to take action. That's as a woman. That's how I feel.
Or does everyone have to be punished? That's where
I don't feel like people have to be punished, but it's enough.
But that senator was being punished for being male. Her response was, how dare you say that to a woman? Well, if we're all being equal here, how dare him say that to anybody? I think, does the woman not, can she not handle it?
You're talking about Hatch getting yelled at by
I think that's semantics.
The grow-up thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I don't think Hatch would have said that to a man. He wouldn't have waved a man off like that. That's, as we know as women in our lives, that's the thing you do to women. Okay, calm down. Like, you know,
right.
Ro just said, Tootsie, honey, all right, it's all okay.
Yeah.
There is
I did not say that. I said that in character. Thank you.
Exactly. But let's not forget what Hatch said just right after seeing Ford's testimony. He said, you know, she seems nice. She's nice looking.
Attractive. It was an attractive witness.
Stuff like that. Now that really bothers me. It didn't used to bother me because that's just
the way you're supposed to just accept it.
It's not the way life is anymore. Yeah. And I'm not saying we need to be militant.
No.
I'm just saying I'm done. So be careful.
Okay. I was always careful because I was born careful around you.
You might be losing some characters is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I guess I don't really get it because I didn't grow up with that. I grew up with, I feel like, men being gentlemen and boys not treating girls like that. So I don't know because I never experienced it personally.
Orrin Hatch is an example of that day gone by, and there's a tone deafness about the way he approaches this sort of thing. I mean, he was one of the ones who threatened to expose Anita Hill's proclivities, and you put it all in context, and then he starts waving women off and telling them to grow up. Yeah, there's pressure on him because these women are sort of attacking him in the hallway, and he feels that pressure, but.
And yet he's still
feels
a senator.
Tone deaf.
It's kind of shocking.
Oh, he's going to be a senator forever.
Yeah.
He'll never lose in Utah. Pat, nice talking to you. It was really good having you on the show today.
Hey, Pat, why don't you grow up, okay?
See, Pat just got here to get
stop
beat up as a guy.
Girls,
yeah, as a,
yeah,
as a Republican man, he's going to, hey, take that.
If you walk by this newsroom, don't you wave me off.
Yeah. Okay, Pat, nice job.
I thought you were going to have me on talking about the Ryder Cup. I'm sorry. I didn't know this, what we were going to talk about.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't change the subject.
Since you used to run a Republican Party in the state of Illinois, give me a whip count here. Do you think that Kavanaugh is going to pass on Saturday morning?
Yeah, I do. I thought if there were any bombshells outside what we heard, and there's no corroboration in the reports, which is 50 pages long, I think he passes.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to take the other side of that bet. I'm going to say Murkowski goes no. I'm going to say Flake goes no, and Manchin goes. Manchin may go yes. But you're
going to go yet.
But then you're going to get Murkowski and Flake to go no.
They're reporting that Lisa Murkowski just had a meeting with dozens of women, some of them sexual assault victims themselves, and it was very emotional, and people said that they spent a lot of time with her trying to convince her to vote no, but she has not announced yet.
Hey, here's the political analysis anyway. I think if he goes down, this does nothing but help Republicans in November.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
They'll be so fired up. It's like they'll be. And you saw the polling numbers and enthusiasm. The Republicans have caught up. So politically, it's probably a better result if he does go down.
For Republicans.
And why do you say that? It just sort of motivates people to come out.
People will be. They will be. But the Republicans are not. The Trump thing, the Republicans aren't motivated. This will motivate them. You always need something to go out for. In town, it was Obamacare. There's always something to go after. And this will motivate the base, which is not motivated. If you get a low turnout election, it tightens up a lot of these races.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Well said. Judy, Judy, say goodbye to Pat.
Goodbye, Judy. Hey, we're buddies, Judy. I would never dismiss
yes,
you.
I brought
you Diet Coke at the party.
You are a stand-up guy, and that's really what it comes down to.
You're one of the good ones, Pat.
You are one of the good ones, as far as I know.
Right, goodbye.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, goodbye. Nice
good talking to you.
Yeah, it was good talk. Judy, what is coming up at the top of the hour in the newsroom?
The hockey game.
Okay, thank you, Violetta.